All right, welcome to Crunching the Numbers for this Friday. We're going to preview not only the Friday night action, but also weekend stuff, as we've got, of course, the conference finals in the NHL. In addition to the two NBA games tonight, we've got NBA games on Saturday and Sunday, and plenty of baseball. I'm going to have free picks for you. I'm Joe Duffy. I'm CEO of OffshoreInsiders.com. We've been in this business since 1988. Because of the character limitations, eliminate the S on Twitter. I'm at Offshore Insider. And please send me any questions that you want there or any suggestions for this podcast, as we'll continue to give you some of the best information on earth. Again, I'm going to preview the NHL Stanley Cup conference finals in a moment. Let's go with the Friday stuff first. Philadelphia in the NBA is -1/224 against Atlanta. 64% of the bets and 77% of the money is on the 76ers, and that's fairly high for a game that is essentially a pick 'em. 60% of the bets and 53% of the money is on the over. Now, when not leading in a series, away favorites are 56-37-6. Now, I should say, really, right before broadcast time, I did see that the line is going up to 1.5 and maybe 2. I did quote the line at 1, which it was. Now, keep in mind, it's somewhat of an anomaly, but it does make sense because generally the louder the statement, the stronger systems are. Away favorites of exactly 1 point are only 4-18, though, in the playoffs. Now, this has been a crazy difference between games 1 and game 2, with the Hawks, of course, completely dominated game 1, and then the Sixers came back with a tremendous effort in game 2. The big difference was Ben Simmons was picking up Trae Young immediately, not letting him drive before picking him up on defense at around the perimeter. So they were putting him on all along, and then having, when they were doing the switches on the pick and roll, Tobias Harris would pick him up, as of course the big advantage that Trae Young would have over Simmons would be the speed. Well, when they had the switch defensively, that really worked. Plus, Trae Young was so unconscious in game 1, there was almost the guaranteed regression in game 2. But of course, Nate McMillan, who's been enormously successful for the Atlanta Hawks as their head coach, he's got this team behind him, and he'll be able to make some adjustments. So this has been a series of adjustments between game 1 and game 2. I expect more of the same tonight. The Sixers bench is deeper, although you could argue that the Hawks bench, the 6 and 7 guys, are actually better for the Hawks, as Herter and Gallinari were excellent. The Hawks dominated the first half, their bench did, but then the Sixers, more depth, where they have, you know, can go 3, 4, 5 deep. That really paid off in the second half, where the Sixers did wind up pulling away. The Sixers are 6-22 against the spread on the road versus an opponent with a winning percentage of 550 or above. The Hawks, meanwhile, though, 3-22 against the spread as home underdogs off an away game. If their last game against their same opponent was a same season road loss. So it doesn't have to be specifically in the playoffs, but yeah, in a revenge situation, including the regular season, they are 3-22 under those specific angles. Now, as you know, I like to use some of my simulators to corroborate the incredible systems that I have on this. AccuScore has the Hawks winning and covering 58% of the time, with 62% going under. And they do have a NumberFire has 68.5% going under. Action Network has just 221.4 points projected, so a slight lean towards the under. As I said, I do think they're one of the best power ratings out there. Odds Trader, though, does have the Hawks winning by 2, and Sportsline has the Hawks covering 59%, winning outright at that same rate, going under 62%. And when I did run that on Sportsline, that's when they were 1 point underdog. So obviously, if you can get them now 1.5, and I even saw if you shop around possibly at 2, that would make the Hawks even stronger, take them above 60% on the ATS simulators. The Suns and the Nuggets. Nuggets are -1.5/223. 52% of the bets on Denver, but 60% of the money on Phoenix, which means a slight sharp play on the Phoenix Suns. 71% of the tickets on the over, but just 53% of the money on the under, implying a sharp play on the under. Now, AccuScore, again, which is one of the better ones, they have the Suns the Suns covering 58.3 with 58.1 going over. Massey does have Phoenix should be a 1.5-point favorite. They're pretty good power ratings, but they do not take into account injury. Action Network has Denver. They should be a -2.3 in their power ratings, or -2.3 in their power ratings. So that gives them a modest edge. And like I said, Action's power lines are generally pretty sharp. So a 0.8 difference is decent. I mean, it's not great, but it is something of some significance. Of course, Denver, they need somebody other than, of course, Nikolai Jokic to step up. Jamal Murray is, of course, out for the year, and they are clearly missing his 21.2 points per game. Michael Porter really needs to step up, but it's not like either one of these teams go that deep offensively. So really, the key for both teams is to slow down the top offensive threat. And maybe, therefore, since the defensive plans are pretty simplified, in looking at it from more of a, what I like to call an organic handicapping standpoint, you could certainly argue that the under might be a decent lean there. All right, I'm going to talk about this Saturday and the Sunday games as well as the NHL from a series standpoint a little bit later. But why don't we get today's baseball out of the way, which will include some free picks. The Giants and the Nationals, the Giants' Anthony DeSclafani is well-rested. He did last pitch on June 3rd, so he could look a little rusty early. If the Giants fall behind, maybe San Fran in the under on a adjusted live line would be something to look very hard at. DeSclafani has been one of the more profitable pitchers this year, plus 4.52 units on the season. Of course, he's going up against Max Scherzer, which does mean if they fall behind, you're going to get a pretty good line there. But Scherzer, 2.23 ERA and 104 strikeouts. The Nats, just 3.88 runs per game they average on offense, which makes them the sixth worst in Major League Baseball, but they're just 0.01 runs behind the two New York teams. So the Nats have one of the least productive offenses this year. Giants have been the best team to bet on all year in the Major Leagues. All year, if you bet on the Giants in every game, they're plus 16.35 units. The Nats have actually been one of the best fades. If you bet against the Nationals all year, you'd be plus 8.25 units. The Nats are also the best under team. They've gone under 36-20-1. As I said, they got one of the worst offenses in the league, so that makes sense. Sportsline does have San Francisco winning about half of these simulations, which, of course, covering the run line at 73%, making them a strong bet. However, when the odds makers tell you that this is a team that has their best chance at winning in a while, it is a great system that is plus 360.56 units. That benefits the Nats. The Nats have been a pick or a dog in nine straight. Now, all of a sudden, they are a big favorite. I do like Washington here, but I will go with them on the run line, although they're a pretty good percentage play, laying the big number. But Washington minus the 1.5 is my official free pick for you here on the Crunching the Numbers podcast from offshoreinsiders.com. Now, the Rockies and the Reds. The Rockies, Kyle Freeland, he hasn't pitched very well, 6.23 ERA. Reds, Tyler Mahle is 3-0 with a 1.04 ERA in his last three starts. He's actually gotten ahead of batters, which is very important. 20 out of the last 27 batters he's faced, he's gotten a strike on the first pitch. He's been the sixth most profitable pitcher in Major League Baseball this year at plus 5.9 units betting on all his games. The Reds are fourth in scoring. That's part of the reason why. Great run support the Reds have given their pitchers this year. They're averaging 4.94 runs per game, and that's why the Reds have gone over 33-22-1. AccuScore does have the Reds winning 74% of the time, which, of course, is 3 out of 4, meaning even with these large odds, pretty good at 2-1. Padres and the Mets. Padres' Matt Snell has been erratic, but consistently inconsistent. When you get a big underdog who's been a box of chocolates, as we like to say, to quote the movie, it's usually a pretty good percentage play because the odds makers, that's another one of our many golden rules. I've kind of developed a bunch of golden rules, not like I have them all written down. And on this report, I got so much information, I'm not going to give one of my generic breakdowns of betting strategies. But one of them is betting on predictably unpredictable teams because the odds makers don't like uncertainty. So San Diego, when you have a pitcher who has been, like I said, you know, at one game he's looked good, the next game not so good, still a pretty good play either fading that pitcher if he's a big favorite, or going with him, he's a big underdog. In this case, the latter applies. So I do think there's some good value there, except, well, the Mets, Jacob DeGrom. I mean, the challenge is finding a reason to go against DeGrom. You'd have to search long and hard. DeGrom is having Cy Young year, obviously. There is, I mean, that's enough said. Jacob DeGrom, every single one of his numbers, every single one of his splits, he's been incredible. There is nothing negative to say about him. The Mets are, and again, from a value standpoint, the only thing is he's been so great that he has to maintain that greatness to be of good value. So that's why I'm not making an official play on San Diego. They might have a little bit of value there, as the Mets are tied for the fourth worst in run production at 3.87 runs per game. So you have a phenomenal pitcher, a team that doesn't score well, going against a pitcher who's been so erratic, but is again capable as an underdog of putting together a really good game, especially against a so-so offense. Still think if you're in the value, well, you should be in the value. Let's put that in the check mark column for San Diego. I think very strong value as an underdog. Mariners and the Indians. Seattle's Justin Dunn is off of the 10-day DL, but in reality, he only missed that one start. Aaron Civale, plus 5.52 return on investment this year. He's been one of the more profitable pitchers in Major League Baseball. The Orioles and the Rays, Keegan Aiken has a career 3.09 ERA as a starter in 8 games, so he's pretty good. Rays are third in the league at scoring at 4.95 runs per game. They are second best team to bet on this year at 13.02 units on the plus side. Meanwhile, Baltimore is the third biggest fade in Major League Baseball. Now, they're a distant third behind the two big fades, and we'll talk about them in a moment. But they're at plus 8.25 betting against, again, betting against Baltimore. So the Rays have been one of the better teams to bet on this year. Baltimore has been one of the better teams to fade, to say the least. As you know, Baltimore has been terrible. And even though they're often an underdog, they're still been a pretty good bet against. The Blue Jays and the Red Sox, I'm going to have a free pick on this one. The Sox, Garrett Richards has been worse at home with a 6.38 ERA compared to 2.89 on the road, 4.22 on-base percentage against, a 4.22 on-base percentage against at home compared to 3.23 on the road. But as I've told you, splits generally don't really hold up over the long term, and also he's pitched more innings on the road. So he's road tested. When a guy's pitched that many innings, that percentage of his innings on the road, and he's coming home, I think he gets some pretty good value here. Red Sox, one of only 5 teams up at least 8 units on the season. As I recall, last year was quite the opposite. They were a big fade, especially early on. Sportsline is the Sox winning 65% of the time, making 121, laying only 121, good value. And in fact, I saw right before broadcast time, I saw it as low as 115. So I would like Boston at 120 or so, but I believe if you shop around, you should be able to get 115. So Boston is another free pick. Now, keep in mind, that should be obvious to everybody. You should have several outs. I know maybe some of you have only one bookmaker, but shopping around for the best line, especially when it comes to money lines in Major League Baseball, because some places have 20 cents juice, some place you can still, there are a couple out there that do have even lower juice. And we've got more details at offshoreinsiders.com, but shopping around for the best line possible, even more so when it comes to Major League Baseball, betting money lines, only because there's such a variance, is so important. White Sox and the Tigers. White Sox are 5-7 in Lucas Giolotto's 12 starts. Now, that's pretty significant because in all other games, they're 32-17. So they're minus 3.51 units with him starting this year. Detroit is the worst in the American League and second worst in Major League Baseball, averaging only 3.74 runs per game. So there you can see where they're not giving a lot of run support. So even quality pitchers may not be such a great bet. But still, overall, you know, they've been pretty quality, getting good pitching. And, Detroit has been a very terrible team this year. And not surprisingly, they have gone under 36-23-3. Sportsline is the White Sox winning at 84%, making them, even at this ridiculous price, very high value. And as I've said, one of the great things about computer software is there are no biases. There are no biases. Because my built-in bias, I hate chalk. I'm allergic to chalk. The thought of betting 170, 180, brings me shivers. But my computer has said the big favorites have actually been pretty good value in recent years. And that's, like I said, that's one of the things that separates me, that emotions are put aside. You got to listen to what the computer says. So even at that high price, pretty good value there. Braves and the Marlins. Look, Charlie Morton, he's been great this year. 2.74 ERA over his last four starts. Miami, 3.84 runs per game, the third worst in Major League Baseball. AccuScore has the Braves winning 63.5% of simulations. And so making 115, laying just 115, a pretty good value there. And that's one of the things I like to do. When you got a cagey veteran like this and he's pitching well, there's a reason that Charlie Morton just keeps sticking around and sticking around. And I'm going to ride him while he's pitching well. So Atlanta would be another free pick we'll give you. Pirates and the Brewers. Pirates chased DeJong, 5.40 ERA. Brewers, Brandon Woodruff, 1.42 ERA, 92 Ks. He's plus 5.17 units if you bet on him every game this year. 10th most profitable pitcher in Major League Baseball. Pirates are dead last in Major League Baseball at runs per game at 3.5. Look, I really think if I went in the batting cages for a couple hours, I might be able to sneak into the Pirates lineup. I mean, they just really have a ragtag lineup that they put out there. So that's why Milwaukee is laying 260. Again, when the odds makers tell you this is a team's best chance to win in recent games, our angle says go with what the odds makers are telling you, that it's plus 360, plus 5-6 units benefiting the Brewers. Milwaukee's been a dog or pick in their last three. Now, all of a sudden, they're a massive favorite. So that's what I'm talking about. Odds makers are telling you this is their best chance in a while to win a game. I'm going to lay the 1.5, Milwaukee minus the 1.5. Another pick here on Crunching the Numbers. Royals and the A's, Royals Bradley Singer minus 4.97 units. A's plus 8.9 units, fourth best in Major League Baseball. So, again, if you want to ride those units, that would say to go with Oakland. Some of these statistics, again, I weigh a lot more heavy than I do other ones, to say the least. So keep that in mind. But here on Crunching the Numbers, that's my theory. I'm not only going to tell you how I evaluate games, but I know for those of you who do bet on your own, and most of you aren't going to buy picks from me at offshoreinsiders.com, and I'm cool with that. So those of you who'd like to make handicapping or handicap games on your own, I want to give you the tools that you might use and weigh a little more heavily than I do. The Astros and the Twins. The Astros average a league-leading 5.38 runs per game. Twins minus 5.65 units with Matt Shoemaker this season. Fifth worst pitcher to bet on. He's got a 7.20 ERA. And the Twins have been the best team to bet against all season. If you faded them in every game, you have won 18.67 units. They're only 24-37. And again, betting against them, almost 19 units on the plus side, and that's pretty significant. Twins are the top over team, going over 40-20-1. Astros are the third biggest over team, going over 35-20-4. So again, two of the top over teams in Major League Baseball in this game. The Angels and the Diamondbacks. Arizona, 20-43. They are the second best fade in Major League Baseball. Betting against them has been plus 17.72 units. Now, Arizona is projected at just plus 107. So I've seen as high as 125 out there. You should be able to get at least 120. Pretty good value there. As I said, I love the power ratings to kind of balance out some of the other handicapping that I do, and they are definitely among the best power ratings out there. Rangers and the Dodgers. The Dodgers are second in Major League Baseball in runs scored, getting 5.25 runs per game. All right. I know a lot of you are interested in the NHL Conference Finals. First of all, to win it all, we know that the great country of Canada, it's been a while since Canada has seen that Stanley Cup. Montreal is plus 1,200 to win it all. So basically 12-1. These odds are based on $100 a bet, of course. Vegas is the favorites, plus 120. Tampa, only plus 150. Tampa's been there and done that. And the New York Islanders are plus 575. And, boy, as a New York Ranger fan, please don't have the Icelanders or the fish sticks. Some of you may get that joke if you're of a certain age. It just goes back to the original New York Islanders logo. Kind of, a lot of people said it looked like the Mrs. Paul's fish sticks. A lot of people called them the fish sticks. Anyway, I'm going to give you my predictions, and especially based on value for each series. I would lean towards Tampa minus 235. I certainly think they're going to win it. I don't think they're great value at minus 235, to be honest with you. But, you know, of course, Nikita Kurachev is back. He missed the entire season. He's got 5 goals, 13 assists in 11 playoff games. So that means, of course, Tampa is a better team than they've shown all year, much better from an offensive standpoint. And I think it's very overrated when it comes to the NCAA tournament. We'll talk about the reasons why, you know, when it's appropriate there. But really, in professional sports, when a team has been there, done that, that's one of those things that I don't think is a square thing. There are a lot of things that squares assume, but Tampa obviously knows how to win the Stanley Cup, and now the deeper you go into the playoffs, the more important that is. Kyle Palmieri also put a little life in the Islanders' offense, so you could really argue that each team's offense is better than the mere statistics would say, and maybe a little bit of a lean towards the over. I know that Barry Trotz, of course, is one of the great defensive coaches in the NHL, but with goals at a premium, when goals are tougher to come by, see, that's what a lot of people will say. In virtually every sport, the postseason is lower scoring, and then they figure, all right, you know, the better defense is more important. Now, I look at points are a commodity. The tougher points are to come by, the more important they are. So the fact that Tampa does have some snipers, some guys who can put the biscuit in the basket, that makes that even more valuable in the postseason. And, of course, you know, we are talking about, you know, Tampa with one of the great goalies in the NHL. And I do think that all in all that Tampa should be the favorite here, but laying 275 is a little bit too much. I think it's going to make a lot of you happy. I do like the Canadians. I think they're a tremendous value at plus 400 to win the series against Vegas. Look, Carey Price, he goes, you know, I told you about it. Being a Ranger fan, look, he goes back to going against my Rangers when we were good. He's been one of the best postseason goaltenders around, one of the best goalies around. And I can't believe that with Carey Price in net, that a team could be such a big underdog in a series, 8-3 with a 1.97 goals against average, 935 save percentage, one shutout. And I also think the fact that the teams have not seen each other, that gets back to uncertainty. And what does uncertainty mean? I kind of alluded to it in baseball. The underdog becomes better value. I just think anytime there's going to be a certain amount of uncertainty that applies to both teams equally, they haven't played against each other, that just benefits the underdog. It's all about that magic word, value, value, value. Yeah, the longer break somewhat neutralizes this, but look, Vegas, they are off of that physically and emotionally draining series. Not to say that the Canadians also haven't been, but they had to come from behind. So that might be a slight edge for Montreal, but still, all in all, I just think the line is too high. I mean, everyone's counting the Canadians out, and at the risk of stating the blatantly obvious, look, you get this far in the playoffs, you're obviously playing well, but with Carey Price at plus 400 just seems to be great value. But again, remember, another one of my golden rules, I frankly do not like to bet futures bets because my handicapping involves game-to-game adjustments. So many of my best systems are based on what happened in the last game and how the odds makers are reacting and overreacting. So these are predictions. Frankly, I'm not going to bet them because of those reasons. I like to have a clear mind before each and every single game. Let's take a look at the weekend's NBA as well. And like I said, I don't think on this report we're going to have quite enough time to do one of my generic things that we like to do on offshoreinsiders.com, discuss a certain amount of strategy. We got so much stuff. For the weekend, though, two NBA games to look at, Utah and the LA Clippers. Clippers are -4, 223.5, 62% of the bets are on the Jazz, 64% on the money is on the Clippers. That implies a sharp play on the Clippers, but look, there's only about 1/25, maybe 1/30 of the bets in. So there are some people who do like to take a look at that early money, but the truth is these numbers will change before game time. It's still early going. Follow me at Offshore Insider for these updated numbers as we get much closer to game time. 56% of the tickets, 74% of the money on the over. Now, teams down 2-0 and returning home as small favorites or underdogs are a 60.75 play. And they are, it's even better in recent years, especially in the first half. So that would certainly say to play both the Clippers on the game, but, and I'm not a big first half player, but I do know that that stat, they're even better in such circumstances playing in the first half line. I think it's going to be a rare case where I will bet a first half line and the LA Clippers. So we are going to go with the LA Clippers probably on the first half line, and we'll definitely take a long look on the game line. Now, Brooklyn is -1 and 228 against Milwaukee. 82% of the tickets and 89% of the money is on the Nets. 52% of the tickets are on the under. 91% of the money is on the over, implying a sharp bet on the over, but only 1/25. Again, we talked about it before. Only about 1/25 of the bets are in, maybe 1/30. So even, you know, we talked about contrarian information. There's not enough to go on, those of you who like to bet contrarian stuff. Although, like I said, I know a lot of people do like the early numbers because they think some of the sharp versus square anomalies do occur early. That generally, the people, the sharpest of sharps sometimes like to bet early, and the squarest of squares like to bet early. So, you know, the contrarian, it's, there's not an exact science when you do take a look at those tickets. The game one total was 239.5, but they're off of a game in which 169 points were scored. So, and again, we're talking about 228 points. So you're saying, well, wait a minute, what's more important? The fact that the last game was so low scoring and that it was one of the biggest discrepancies in the history of betting, by the way, one of the biggest discrepancies between the total and how much it went over, or especially under by, because you can go over in overtime, but in regulation, I mean, it was a historic under relative to what the total was, but this total does keep dropping. Now, if a previous same season series game saw 171 or fewer points scored, it does lean towards the under. The next game does go under, so there is a certain regression. 76, 69, and 3, including 49 and 39 since 2006. So again, basically what that angle is saying is that games that were very low scoring in the same series generally bounce back, and it makes perfect sense. We know both of these teams have good offenses, contrary to what it's looked like. So you don't want to put too much stake in what happened in the last game. The odds makers were right as far as the total was so far. They don't make that many mistakes. So again, this is one of those where I do think there is a very good chance that because of the regression to the mean, the over is a pretty good play. And in fact, let me talk about that a little bit more. I think they're telling us in the studio that I do have a little bit more time than I thought. So that is very good. And, you know, send me a message if I'm misreading it. So that is so important. Regression to the mean is arguably the three most important words when it comes to gambling and handicapping. The odds maker, or the public generally likes to bet on the hotter team and the better team. And we, as professional bettors, quite the opposite. We know that teams are never as bad as they look in their worst game. They're never as good as they looked in their best game. So that is one of the more important things. And if a team is playing well above their heads against another team that is ice cold, believe it or not, more times than not, we're going to go with the colder team. And why is that? Because the odds makers adjust. They have to know that the public would much rather bet the hotter teams. And I even know a guy who's a who's in the business. I'm not going to say what his name is, but I've heard him even say, like, yeah, I saw the Buffalo Bills play last week. They looked terrible. I'm going to bet against them. They just looked atrocious. And then, of course, what happens the next week? The Bills come out and they bounce back and play a good game. So sometimes watching the games can be a detriment because you get too biased by watching one game. And I know of another old hat in this business who said when it came to football handicapping that he would like to come up with a line the week before and then compare that power line to what the current line is because he knew that the odds makers were going to over-adjust based on the previous week. And that's something that I also like to use myself. We talk about using the odds makers' knowledge against them. Several sports books, there's one in Vegas and there's one offshore that will come up with look-ahead lines. And instead of having to come up with my own power lines, and I said I do use some of those power lines, but I take those look-ahead lines in college football and the NBA especially, and then use them as basically power ratings and then fade the biggest line moves. Well, at least put the fade in the column of a certain team. So in other words, if a look-ahead line had a team as a 1.5-point favorite, and then all of a sudden they're a 4.5-point favorite, I might put a check mark in the column of the underdog. However, of course, what is enormously important is not so much about how each team looked the previous game, but of course you've got to adjust for injuries. And the games are so much more physical this day and age. So if a line move has to do with an injury, or in the case of weather, if it has to do with some weather information, then of course it's canceled out. But when a line move clearly looks like it's because of a lot of money on one side, as a general rule of thumb, I do like to usually bet against that and fade it. So that's one of the reasons why I do love to take that bet online. That's the offshore sports book. And I know that it's duplicated by MGM. I believe MGM is another sports book that uses a look ahead line. I always will use that as power ratings, but you got to make those proper adjustments. And then, like I said, use those power ratings and then measure it. Is it because of an injury? And speaking of, when I talk about weather, handicapping weather in baseball and in football, and again, this is more of a generic thing that I do want to talk about our strategies. The single most important thing is the wind speed. Precipitation in football, if there's like an 80% chance of rain, but the winds are expected to be like 5 to 10 miles an hour max, and then the total drops, the over becomes a very good play because it's the wind that definitely affects the total. And I use some of the stuff from Bet Labs. A lot of their angles have to do with wind speed. And yeah, high wind speed generally means unders, but square moves happen. If there is a football game, like I said, that is almost certainly going to rain or snow and the total plummets, but the wind speed is going to be fine, that generally makes the over a great play. And that's because the offense knows which direction they're going. It's the defense that's got to keep up. So, you know, you can have the wide receiver make his cuts and moves, and trying to stay up with him is much harder than the wide receiver, basically, when he knows where he's going. So that's just one of those things to take into consideration a little bit more down the road. Also, in Major League Baseball, yeah, the high humidity, a lot of people say, well, that does mean more unders, but the odds makers are one step ahead of you. They do make those adjustments. I haven't really found anything, any big edge when it comes to humidity. Although, when you're talking about the extreme heat, you do know that a team is going to go to their bullpen a lot earlier. So we're approaching those dog days of July and August. And of course, you know, it gets pretty warm here in the U.S. in June. So that's one of those things I do want to look at, is the combination of both the heat and the humidity, because you know if it's above 90 degrees and it's above 90 degrees or above 90% humidity, that the team is very likely to go to their bullpen. That's one of the most frequent questions that I get. How do you handicap bullpens? And it is much more so when we're talking about a long stretch, where if a team's playing a weekend series where it's likely going to be very hot and very humid along the way, weigh the bullpens much heavier. And that's one of the reasons why the five inning lines have become so much more popular, because the bullpens are a little bit tougher because you don't necessarily know. So many managers are into the lefty righty thing. So who the first guy out of the bullpen is going to be isn't predetermined. It could be depending on the situation. And then, you know, so trying to handicap who is coming out of the bullpen is a little tough. And that's one of the main reasons why those 5.5 inning bets have become popular, at least based on some people I've talked to. Of course, football is the most popular sport far and away across the world, the NFL. Here in the States, they like to bet on, we love to bet on college football as well. And if you're in Canada, you got to fall in love with our college football. A lot of totals opportunities in particular, but the percentage, more so not volume, but the percentage, I know a lot more books are getting a higher percentage of action on 5.5 inning, the first half sides and totals, because of those exact reasons. A lot of bettors like to focus just purely on the starting pitchers, and the starting pitchers numbers are, of course, go much more heavily into the 5.5 inning runs and the totals as well. So also, you know, again, in the NHL, like I said, I will be looking. I don't have any game picks yet, waiting for my databases to be updated. But this becomes even more important as we go deeper into the playoffs. Quality teams are usually pretty good bet against at home. And of course, you're talking about the Stanley Cup semifinals. Then we get to the Stanley Cup finals. So of course, you're going to be talking about a quality team at home. Keep that in mind. Also, the bounce back becomes more important. The better a team is off of a loss, the more likely they are to bounce back. So my databases haven't been updated for the game one predictions. I checked them. A couple of them haven't really uploaded it. But that is one thing to keep in mind. Just to say, I'm not saying to go and blindly bet the road team in each and every game. Although, as I said, the Canadians, I'm really surprised at that line. But that's another one of those kind of golden rules. If a line looks too good, maybe there is a reason that it looks too good. But I could very well, at least when it comes to my organic handicapping, I would be leaning very strongly towards the Canadians. I just think they're going to be a pretty good value each game. However, what did I say? That's the magic of the computer software. It can eliminate any biases. So I still use organic handicapping, but if my computer completely contradicts what my organic handicapping does, I look at these teams and then I look at the line, I'm saying good value here. I'll either pass on the game or, if anything, go with what the computer says, depending on the return on investment and the units won. And that is another thing that, you know, again, is what looks like we do have a teeny bit more time than I originally thought, that when it comes to my database, I weigh games. There's something called a Z-score, and you could look up the calculations. Fortunately, my computer does the calculations, but it's a statistic and also the p-value. And these are things that statistics, they take the sample size and then they measure it against the percentage, and that shows you how reliable a statistic is. So I'm not going to be riding, you know, a 14-0 statistic, a 12-0 statistic. As a general rule of thumb, for me, something has to have won at least 80 units before it becomes even semi-significant. And most of the systems that you hear me quote are usually up 150 units. In Major League Baseball, it's a couple hundred units. So winning percentage doesn't mean much to me. Every now and then, people I trade information with, they'll be like, oh my God, check out this statistic. It's 25-2. Now, there are maybe some playoff-specific ones in the NBA. The sample size is smaller, and then the 25-2 statistic will go over the entire history of my database. And if it looks like there's a very specific reason why this wins, I will ride it. But almost every single system that I use that becomes statistically significant is up like 150 games, 200 and something games. And this is after the juice, by the way, not just 200 games above 500. This has to be after laying the juice. And in Major League Baseball, of course, many of these statistics can be hitting at 52%, yet they can be up 300 units because it gets back to that magic word of value. And even though, as much as I hate it, as I've said, favorites have become pretty good plays in recent years, there's still very good value in a lot of underdogs. And some of my best systems do have to do with the underdogs winning a pretty high percentage. So yeah, that's a mistake that I do see a lot of my fellow handicappers make. Look, I have access to analysis of some guys, and they'll find, like, I know StatFox or Fox Sheets is a very popular source for a lot of information for some handicappers. And I used to be a big fan of that. They haven't gotten as good in recent years. They don't really update their systems. And although some of the systems I have stored trace back to the days where I used to use the Fox Sheets, they're just not that. They have a good database for organic handicapping if you want to see how a team has done recently. But when it comes to the systems they have there, I haven't really seen a very good one in years. So to be honest with you, if somebody is quoting something from StatFox, a lot of those are a little bit outdated. They haven't updated them in a while. And if it's not a bare minimum, and I'm talking a bare minimum of 80 units on the plus side, I don't consider it that significant. And now that our databases keep getting better and better and the computer software keeps getting better and better, it's almost to the point where it's got to be like 125, 150 units on the plus side. And of course, I do weigh it against the winning percentage. But again, the Z-score does that. Z-score is usually 4.5 minimum. Once it gets above 5 percentage points, it becomes pretty significant. And, you know, so we do use what statistics use, the same statistics they use, the Z-score and the P-value. And it's not like I could exactly explain it to you, but luckily you can plug into those numbers into a calculator to see what the Z-score is and what the P-value is. And I couldn't, like, take a chalkboard and explain you how to calculate it, but that's just the magic of, you know, computers. Like I said, computers do hundreds and in many cases thousands of man hours of work, and they eliminate biases. And that is very much true when it comes to calculating whether or not the systems I'm using are statistically significant. But again, some people do ask me which ones to use. I get questions all the time. The Bet Labs is pretty good. They don't really go back quite as far. I like the sports database because once you learn the SQL language, there's just so much that you could do with that. And it's one of those cases where, yeah, I guess I wish I did pay a little bit more attention to algebra in school. The SQL language is based more on algebraic expressions, but, you know, Bet Labs is half decent. So again, join us every single Tuesday and Friday for now. And we're talking with the bosses there. I do want to do some traveling. I don't want to start going 5 days a week and then take some time off in July after building up some momentum, but I should be done my traveling in July, and we hope to do this on a much more regular basis, especially as preseason football. I hope my friends in Canada, please bet preseason football, and I'll say this, that's one I do like the database at Fox Sheets, admittedly for preseason football. I probably shouldn't give away too many of my secrets, but yeah, we'll have preseason primer rotations, who teams are playing, you know, who's likely to play many snaps, all that and more. So we're going to take it to the next level beginning August the 1st. But until now, until I get some of my summer traveling out of the way, join us every Tuesday and every Friday here at usually around 3 o'clock Eastern time. And like I said, in about 2 months, we're really going to ramp it up with more and more information. I got so much great systems for you in football. You are going to make a ton of money this season in the NFL.